Holy fuck, it's Father's Day.
Yep.
I gotta make calls after this.
Wait, didn't we talk about this being an issue? With scheduling
Happy Father's
and whatnot?
Day, Cookie.
Oh, no, it's all good.
Oh, no, I just need to make calls. To
we can visit my dad later.
Yeah, I need to make some calls, too. So, speaking of Father's Day, everybody, this is the Fancy Ramen Podcast episode in regards to Tokyo Godfathers. I'm Neil.
I'm Lizzie.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Scott.
And I'm under the impression that everyone here has watched Tokyo Godfathers now, including you, listeners. So let's talk about this anime. This is a pretty cool movie, I thought, made or directed by Satoshi Kon. And I could be wrong, but I think David Productions might have did the animation for it.
I can look into that real quick for you.
I'll fact check it. Who wants to start us off discussing this particular movie?
I liked it.
Yeah, there's a big question I have, and do you guys consider it more of a comedy or a little more of a drama? Or is it 50-50 right down the line?
I think it's both.
I'm going to call it more of a comedy.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, when you compare the rest of the stuff that Satoshi Kon has done, and granted, for anyone that hasn't, they might not have the same insight, but I sort of felt like this was way more lighthearted compared to anything else, compared to Paranoia Agent, compared to Perfect Blue, compared to, God, what else has he done? Maybe on the same level of Paprika, but Paprika's like way weirder, right?
Paprika's out there.
Oh, and I apologize, I got that wrong. It's Madhouse, the folks that did Death Parade, our last assignment, so.
Oh, okay.
Pretty cool. Interesting.
And I will say the reason I consider it a comedy more than a drama, even though, like, things were going on and it was kind of, like, sad in a way, I find happenstance films hilarious. Like, when everything just happens to fall into place, I'm just like, ah, life doesn't work like that.
It seems like they're pretty pretty aware of themselves, too, during the course of the film. Like, the constant...
Right.
It's like, oh yeah, we're cold and homeless, so we're going to have runny noses.
Yeah. And they don't blow their noses in public.
Is that a thing, really?
Yeah, in Japan, it's like a thing. So, because I watch the YouTuber Texan in Tokyo, and she said that was one of the things that bugged her the most, is that when it was cold out, everyone sniffled instead of blowing their nose, because it's considered rude to blow your nose.
Oh my goodness, I'm going to fit in Japan so well if I go. I'm like a sniffle machine right now, too. I'm allergic to half the plants outside the house.
Oh my gosh.
Adapting. Yeah. And so it's just been a miracle that with all the rest of our recording, I haven't been in like terrible allergy state, but it will happen. And I will try my best not to like drip snot on the mic. And so you guys will get to hear a lot of Japanese polite sniffs.
Oh, nice.
My question to you guys is in regards to Tokyo Godfathers, do you feel like the movie maybe has like a message or a meaning to it at the end of it? Like do you think there's a moral to the story?
I think they tried to force a moral to the story, but there's no real moral to the story because they don't give you the end.
So right. What's the forced moral, do you think?
The forced moral is do good things and good things will happen for you.
Oh.
I'd also argue it might be slightly critical in the fact that our three lovable sort of homeless characters have all like committed a mistake or done something wrong in their past, and most of them come to face it at some point or another during the narrative. But when we compare our protagonists towards some of the other people that they actually meet in the wide spans of Tokyo, we find that, you know, everybody's got their problems and their deficiencies. And, you know, like the drunk guy who calls them out for being in that I don't know if it's a convenience store or whatnot. It's right before the ambulance crashes in.
Oh, yeah.
But the dude's obviously toasted and just milling about, and he's hurling insults at them and having them thrown out of the store. And it's like, this guy's no better of a person than, you know, our homeless protagonists who are being looked down upon.
Oh, and speaking of the humor element, as soon as the ambulance driver gets out of the car, he tells the convenience worker to call an ambulance. Yeah.
Greatest joke of the whole movie. I watched this with my sister and my girlfriend, and I remember my sister like put her hands on her face because she was like, "What is happening?" And she just couldn't understand it. It was great.
I have a question for everyone. Are LGBT people accepted in Japan?
Well, you know what? Since you've brought that up, let's actually bring up the second half of our email from Catherine from Lawrence. She writes, I consider myself to be fairly sheltered in my upbringing, so I'm not sure how to evaluate this. Tokyo Godfathers is an early 2000s anime from Japan, which has a completely different culture when it comes to sexuality and gender than America. Hana is a trans woman who we see called names by main and background characters. We see various instances where people do not know how to interact around her as well, like the soup line and taxi driver. Right. Even Jin is guilty of calling her several gender and sexual aims names, but she seems to be more or less accepted by Jin and Miyuki. Miyuki in particular seems to acknowledge and support her love for Jin as well. Is this anime progressive for its time? And yeah, I kind of was wondering that too, because this movie was released in 2002, I think.
Is that recent? I guess.
Recent.
15 years ago?
Yeah.
I don't know why I was just thinking this was a 90s movie.
Oh, the animation quality is not amazing. Yeah.
It's got that like hand-drawn older feel.
Yeah.
So that's why I was just putting in the 90s.
I mean, I think it was pretty progressive because I love how they portrayed her as that's just who she is or who he is. I don't know what term to use, but they portrayed it as, you know, normal. Like, that's just how it is. And I think it was good that, I don't know, they portrayed it as people accepted her for who she was, you know.
2003. November 8, 2003 in Japan.
I did love that part, though, when they joked that she was eating for two and then she had the baby later and the cook was like, she was eating for two.
That was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm real curious. Like, I feel like by today's standards, there are definitely things that people could be or people could find offensive. I do think that if Fuka, the anime that we were watching, what, like a few months ago, has any statement to current, you know, social norms, it does seem like at least gay men in particularly are kind of shunned or frowned upon in modern society.
Oh.
But homosexuality has been a part of Japan's history for a very long time.
Since the Edo period.
Yeah.
Shido period?
Exactly.
One of those periods.
Like whatever Samurai Champloo taught me.
Yeah.
But I'm curious too, just because like back in 2003, like I personally didn't really have any knowledge of what being trans meant, not until like the lead singer of the band Against Me came out, and that was maybe like less than 6 or 7 years ago.
I was about to say, I think Gakt and Mana have been cross-dressing on stage for ever.
Oh, I should note, too, though, that I was raised in a town of, like, 20,000 people.
Cross-dressing, so. I believe, though, is a little bit different from trans.
It can be very different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I was in middle school, so I don't know if I even... Yeah, I think I was pretty sheltered, so I don't know if I even knew about that.
Touche. Yeah. I was out of Japan by that point.
Where's Who your knows? Expertise on this, Scott?
Man, see, that's the thing, is I'm so, like, I feel like being so tacit about talking about another culture's understanding of such a, like, an issue that's so complex for even most Americans to try and come to a consensus on.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So, I'm really held up between, like, not saying anything or saying that, you know... My impression of Japanese culture comes primarily from anime, you know. even the friends that I've made that are from Japan, I haven't necessarily had these conversations with them. So
what
I can't say
What about your experience during that time?
My personal experience is it seems like because Japan is like they do appreciate a more like traditional and conformative culture, at least in like their professional settings. I imagine that this film was somewhat progressive in what it was doing, but you can't say that it was really ahead of its time when they still use the transgendered character as like a gag for a lot of the movie.
Yeah.
True.
Like they use, as much as Hana is a wonderful character and I really adored her character and how they like had her interact with her friends, at the end of the day, it would be really hard to argue that they didn't use her as a joke, maybe a little more judiciously than I think would probably happen now, and especially if this were, say, written specifically for an American audience, right. I think it would be a lot less harsh on her character.
I think too many people would be triggered and what's the word? Really dismayed and distraught at a movie about homeless people in America nowadays.
But do you think?
Yeah. I feel like homelessness, people get almost offended by it now.
That's the word I was looking for.
I think people shut down when it comes to confronting homelessness.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we don't want to talk about it. We don't want to address the problem.
We don't want to look homeless people in the eye. Like, it's certainly a problem.
I say have a good day.
Well.
Yeah. If you get the opportunity to just, like, wish someone well when it looks like they're down on their luck, you should do it, but sometimes it is really hard to do.
Right.
Personally, one of the things that gets me is, and this is only speaking about panhandlers, but it's hard sometimes to know when someone's actually homeless.
Right, exactly.
And yeah, Omaha has some intersections that are notorious for panhandling and panhandlers. Right. There's similar issues here as well. I think every community where there's people who are truly in need, there are those disguised among them as people who are doing just fine,
right,
and getting more than what they need.
To get us back to the anime, though, to the movie, one thing I want to say in support, and this will maybe be like the last note we have for this particular question and email, is that I did feel at least very positive from the fact that when Miyuki was asking about Hana's feelings for Gin, that was treated much more seriously. And like the only humorous element in Hana's response was just more about being tsundere, you know, like, or denying it, not so much fueled behind her trans identity, if that makes sense.
No, it was genuine expression of love and appreciation, and with no no hesitancy whatsoever. And I'd agree, that was really like cool and kind of inspiring to see that they got that down. Early 2000s, and you know, you still don't commonly see writing as bold as that, or a character being allowed to be that kind of, I guess, like emotionally strong or honest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, I did have one issue towards the end of the movie, and that was partly with the main character, Miyuki's body image, and I felt it was almost kind of weird or inappropriate. Not inappropriate from a standpoint of like morals or standards, but more just what kind of message that they're trying to send as Miyuki is running up the staircase to try and catch up with the baby and the fake mother, so to speak.
Are you talking about how she goes from, at least under her coat, we can't really tell her body size, but from previous imagery and like flashbacks, she's, you know, in a portly shape, and then she's actually quite fit when she's running up the stairs. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
We've also known that she was homeless for over half a year.
Yeah, right. For 6 months.
Yeah, so it does make some sense that her body would lose that fat.
Right. If she's trying to survive on the street. Change, though, when she's having that dream about her family, which, like, each member of her family are replaced with Gin and Hana. So we see her body shape and or size change there. It begs the question, why does she have to strip down to just her undercoat, we'll say?
To run up.
Yeah, I understand
building of stairs.
The plot is that, like, the justification is that running up the stairs makes you very hot and it's probably easier to run with less stuff on you. But at the same time, there's a lot of unrealistic shit that happens anime.
Yes.
So why bring up that particular thing there? Like,
they're trying to stay grounded when it comes to not the baby. I can see it that way.
Yeah.
So because every time something miraculous happens, the baby's involved. Like as soon as Hana finds the baby, as she's walking back to their place, there are like several accidents that
happening
just
all around.
Happen
yeah.
to miss her because of the baby. So anytime the baby's not around, like Gin getting beat up and the mysterious old guy with the magic ticket dying and all that stuff, like everything's grounded really solidly in reality until the baby comes around.
Yeah,
and then shit just
gets
magical.
That baby's a gift from God.
I might have heard that a couple times. So
that's my take on it, at least.
So am I being overly sensitive when I feel like the anime is kind of portraying a little less love for certain body image types for women?
I will probably argue... first off, I want to agree with Cookie and what he said so far. But I might argue against you as a counterpoint just slightly, because the Latin American woman, who I just wanted to give her a country origin, is Brazil. I'm just picking one.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's where they said. I think that's where they said the guy was from.
Oh, okay, that's good.
What, Brazilian men can only marry Brazilian women? Gosh, you guys.
Well, they were speaking the same language.
Yeah, no. But anyway, like she's portrayed as a very kind of like kind and motherly figure, and she's sort of a role model or support for Miyuki. And I mean, she's not like. She's not thin or super fit in her body type either. I think she has a similar shape to Miyuki.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and they portray her very positively. I don't see any negative connotations about her scenes whatsoever. So,
right.
I'm just willing to say that, you know, maybe they really did just want to stick to the fact that, like, you're going to lose a shitload of weight when you're trying
homeless.
To eat out of trash cans.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I would say, though, is like sometimes it's a little bit more acceptable for older women to be bigger because they're past their, you know, age of beauty or whatever because they are older. So for them to portray an older woman as bigger and acceptable, I mean, I don't know. I don't really know if they were going
no,
for
any
of
that. No, you might have
a
point there.
Yeah. But, yeah, I don't know if they were actually trying to say anything about that or if it was just the homelessness factor.
I think it's fair that we can all just say, Neil, you're a sensitive special snowflake.
I mean, I do have a friend that, well, she's female and she lived in Japan during her formidable years. And she did say that she was made fun of because she had hips. And so all the girls gave her a really hard time for being curvy.
Oh, you're not shaped like a plank of wood? Come on.
Yeah,
get on our level.
So I think
don't send
she
Shakira
did
to
say,
Japan.
I mean, there is that pressure there to be skinny, I think. She said she did have a hard time with it. So I don't know if it's still like that or, you know, I don't know. But...
Do you have a basic time frame of, I mean, I'm going to assume that yes, it's probably very similar because even though, you know, this movie was made early 2000s, we can say that cultural trends as far as body image are, you know, a long-term transition, I'd say. And so, you know, maybe 15 years really isn't that much time for an entire, you know, public or generation to kind of change their opinion about body image.
No, that's about the right timing, because if you think about 15 years ago here, I think everyone was still on the anorexia kick.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the really skinny, flat stomach.
And now all girls got to have a donk.
I kind of thought, though, that are we not still in a position or like in a phase where it's more of like a reactionary norm happening right now? Like, are we not still like exiting the anorexic sort of image phase?
I think there is some of that still, but I think now a lot of people have been fighting for more positive body images portrayed in the media and stuff. So think slowly we're transitioning to more of an acceptance of every body type.
Yeah, I just think that maybe 15 years ago, I mean, I think we might be giving ourselves too much credit right now to say that there is not, there is still like not a group of society that is pushing thin is, I can't make a catchphrase, right. But thin is better, so right. to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think you make a good point there, Neil. It's we do have a reactionary element maybe in our culture that's pushing for a more positive and a more like body acceptance kind of slant. But at the end of the day, you know, we haven't seen such major changes to the point where body positivity is still not seen as its own, it like once body positivity and I guess like acceptance of whatever form you're comfortable in becomes the norm, we won't be necessarily talking about it again.
Right.
It'll be such a norm that it doesn't deserve conversation or it doesn't warrant that.
Exactly.
And so I think Neil's right that we're definitely making a slower transition, and I don't want to give us more credit than the credit that's due.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't too long ago where I think, I mean, just by the nature of being able to say that, I'm sure some major celebrity probably just got a bunch of shit on Reddit or whatever, Twitter, over having a not perfect bikini body and showing up in a bikini.
Yeah.
But getting back to the anime again.
Neil, it's impossible to get back to the anime. It's so grounded that it spurs off to real life.
So I wanted to touch on something that I can't remember who brought it up, but the golden tickets, we'll call it.
That was me.
They happen to have the however millions of yen they will win because of the lotto ticket that they got from the old man.
The old man who died, who gave Jin the pouch, who said, "Here, when I go, it's going to be best if no one realizes my identity."
Which, yeah. That alone, I'm wondering, like, was there any meaning to that?
So when the pouch dropped, you saw the ticket and also the guy's ID card.
Did we get any hints as to who that old homeless man was? Or
besides the ticket and the ID card? No. And they just completely said, for Tokyo Godfathers 2. They quite literally just said, here's an even bigger thing that's about to happen in these people's lives thanks to, what the hell was the baby's name if the baby was not Miyuki?
Or Kiyuki?
Is it
Kiyoki? Oh,
Kiyoko.
Kiyoko.
Kiyoko. Oh.
Kiyo for purity and then Ko for a suffix, I guess.
Thank you. So this is just another random thing that's going to show up in these people's lives because of Kiyoko.
Well, so on this topic of like jumping back to like the moral of the story too, that ending, we can only assume basically their life from there on out is going to be not necessarily smooth sailing, but just high fortune all around, because we have these three homeless people that all seem to have come into this massive fortune or whatever that lottery is going to be. I think they give the number at some point in time.
They do.
I'm pretty sure it's a ridiculous amount.
1111. Oh, I thought you meant the lotto ticket number.
Oh, well, that too is also very ridiculous.
Yeah.
But the daughter is obviously going to be accepted back into her family if she chooses to return to it.
I think she is.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, Gin, or all three of them are going to be the godfathers of this baby, hence the name Tokyo Godfathers. And that ending just kind of still makes me wonder if I'm supposed to take anything else from this movie away from, gee, wow, that was a crazy experience and everything turns out to be okay.
You know, I just have to make the comment that the guy who had a gambling problem was given the winning ticket.
Yeah, so, that's ironic now that you mention it.
It was just like, I thought that was kind of funny because technically it was his, you know, but I'm sure, do you think he would share it with both of them?
At least him and Hana would get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that old girl's going to go her separate way with her family.
Right.
And then Gin and Hana's life is actually going to take a dramatic downturn because they're not going to have the baby around nearly as much now that they're rich. And the family who gets the baby, who's a gift from God, their life's just going to be amazeballs.
And maybe that's why they don't show us, you know, anything after right. that, because it's not going to be nearly as interesting having an epilogue.
Right.
But you would imagine if you're, I mean, do you not see your godfather often, guys?
No.
No.
Does anyone here have a godfather?
Yes.
Maybe. I think.
If I do, they're doing a shit job because I don't know who they are.
I didn't know them. I guess they knew me as a baby, but they sent me like a Christmas gift every year. And that's about it. I don't really know them.
Are the Christmas gifts like meaningful in any way aside from being toys? Like, are they a bunch of random items that once you turn like 30, they all pile up together into saving your life?
Wait, they were she's just getting like Voltron?
Oh, I don't know. They were just, you know, regular gifts. But they always included a nice card with it. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if that would mean that they would be around the baby more often, or more often than complete strangers, at least. Especially considering the amount of things they have to do to save the kid.
Right.
And now that they have millions of dollars, assumedly, would the family not, like, yeah, maybe it's meant to, this comment is meant to be a little malicious.
Oh shit, Hana's about to die.
No, I think Hana was just
coughing up blood.
Sick.
Yeah, supposedly just due to, what was the doctor saying?
Exertion.
Right.
Yeah, so
she could have had pneumonia or something.
Needs to get rest and needs to, like, get plenty of sleep and rest and all that, all sorts of things that homeless people can't get.
I think it might also be one of the motivators for her to eventually end up in the hospital so they can run into Gein's Kyoko and whatnot.
Yeah, but like, they didn't
It could
that.
Be kind of a smoking gun to get her there. You know what I mean?
That does make sense. But they didn't need to know that because Kyoko was a baby touched by God.
Right.
So
happenstance.
Everything was just super happenstance because she was trying to... She collapsed finding Kyoko, thus getting to...
The other Kyoko.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no way. I don't think they knew anything. And Hana especially didn't know... Where
right.
adult Kyoko was.
Hana thought at that point when she collapsed was under the impression that adult Kyoko was dead still.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great point. That's a very good point because she didn't know anything about Gein's past until after the baby showed up and he started talking about it.
Right.
Does bring in.
Which, by the way, does go to further, it does provide some evidence that Gein and Hana. While their relationship may not be sexual in nature, I think they have some sort of like romantic bond or companionship between the two of them because they're able to live together for some unexpected amount of unnamed amount of time. And
you could call it platonic love.
Yeah, exactly.
At least 30 years. We're not sure how long Hana's been on the streets. Actually, no, we found out how long she's been on the streets, but... But Gein, we don't know when Gein and Hana
met up, right?
Because Gin's been on the streets for 30 years. I believe that was the time frame. But then they also said when Hana went on the streets after she broke up with old buddy, who she left mother for.
Who passed away, right? Because mother asks if it was the AIDS. I think literally in my subtitles it was the AIDS.
Yes. No, he like slipped and fell.
Yeah, yep, exactly. He slipped and fell on soap. It's like, oh, I can't remember her retort after that, but something like death, always at death's door. I don't know.
You're always like one step away from death.
Yeah.
Or death is always around the corner or under the soap in this case.
I mean, did you guys have some like overall closing thoughts or anything like that?
I thought it was good.
I like stories that just happen to be like happenstance stories. They're just like,
yeah,
crazy shit's going on and it's all bringing everything together. What?
So you must really like Guy Ritchie films then, huh?
Who's Guy Ritchie?
Oh, man.
You got to remember, I don't know people's names. I don't know the name of my friends.
If you like movies like Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels,
oh, that was good.
Snatch.
Yeah. Oh, that was good too.
Exactly. Yeah, those movies are
amazing.
Right up your alley then. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I loved it for the same reasons. I loved the just weird coincidences, and the humor was great. That ambulance still cracks me up when I think about it.
I've had that situation happen in real life where I saw two cop cars run into each other, and I was like, and
they call the police.
Yeah. It's like, who do cops call when they have an accident with each other?
They probably called dispatch, and they're like, hey, we're going to be out for a little bit.
Yeah, they got to call their CO, like the officer in charge, to actually come deal with it at that point.
Oh, you know what another just absolutely brilliant gag was that had me on the floor is the gossipy neighborhood women.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
and
man.
How they know the whole story of the family just through like rumors and gossip between one another.
But
the ultimate surveillance system.
And the gag of having to call in more and more people. So by the end, there's like 12 people, 12 women.
I also have a question regarding Kyoko the baby. She's got a forehead mole, which I think is like a Buddha marking or something, if I remember correctly.
Sounds right.
Yeah. Like a forehead mole is... it's like a third eye or something. And so it's a characteristic of the Buddha. And so it's one way to represent it in another character, I guess.
Oh.
Yeah, which also explains the brilliant luck that Kyoko has, because she is a gift from God in a vague way.
Gotcha.
I didn't even think of that. That's pretty cool.
Yep. Any closing thoughts, Neil?
You know, I really, really enjoyed... animation gags too. You don't necessarily get this as much from more like maturely animated movies or series now, where they kind of exaggerate their facial expressions. You'll get it a lot from like the very moe or very cutesy or SD style anime or like character designs, but this taking like Satoshi Kon's like iconic style where characters aren't necessarily ridiculously proportioned and they're not moe, no one has blue hair and that sort of thing, but still coming out with those ridiculous facial expressions, like when they're arguing at each other or when Miyuki gets discovered by her father, it turns out to be on the subway. I don't know. I really, really enjoy the animation style. It was definitely not top notch or polished, but I think that actually
helped.
Yeah, yielded to what they were trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
I didn't know that the expressions were a cone thing, but I did actually, like I said, I watched this with my sister and my girlfriend, and both of them were like laughing at different points and saying, like, one of them was like, oh my God, the expressions. So I didn't realize that that was a talent of his in particular. But I do have to agree, like the facial expressions were amazing. They're spot on. They just seem to be so perfect in whatever like emotion or reaction that they were trying to evoke. And I was really surprised and impressed by it.
Yeah, I liked them.
Did you have any closing thoughts, Lizzie?
I thought overall it was pretty good. Yeah, I think it was good.
Omake!
what's your guys' favorite characters? We should each name our favorite character.
The guy who died next again.
The old man.
The old man.
The rich old man.
You would.
The about to be rich old man.
Yeah, because they played the exact same scene over and over again like 3 times. I love that kind of gag where he's just like, all right, I'm dead. And then Gin tries to close his eyes. His eyes aren't closing. He's like, ugh.
Yeah. He repeats his last request as if he had never said it the first time. Too.
Exactly. It's like alcohol.
I mean, I feel kind of bad, but it was amusing to me when the annoying, well, I'm going to call them yuppies. I don't know what they are. The people that were not homeless drag out his corpse.
And start like, beating it.
Yeah.
I'm just like, you're going to die today, old man.
You're beating a dead horse here in multiple ways.
Oh, that actually reminds me. I didn't mention this, but when they first introduced the old guy on death's door, he's wearing the same exact outfit that Gin's wearing. So when it first happened,
yeah.
I was thinking, oh, this is this is old Gin because this is right after he refused to go look for Kyoko and the baby, or the baby and the chick. And what's her name just told him, Hana said, I hope you go die in a ditch somewhere because you're just old and useless.
Right.
And that's the first thing that the old guy said to Gin. So it's like, oh, this is just
it's Gin of Christmas Future.
Yeah. So I was thinking it was going to be like some kind of random he's drunk hallucination. But then it turns out to be like an actual thing, because when it first showed, I was like, is that Gin? And then I was like, no, it's not, because he's old. But is it old Gin because he's wearing the same exact like hoodie, shirt combination, jacket thing that Gin was wearing?
I didn't even notice that. Yeah. I too figured it was meant to be a very on the nose comparison to like, this is where you will be if you don't change your ways, Gin. Right.
And then it turns out it's just some random old guy
that happens to have the winning ticket.
Yes.
I can't help but like Miyuki the best, and I feel bad saying that because
she stabbed her dad.
Well, not only that, but she's also like the prototypical Satoshi female lead protagonist. Like, does she not look a lot like Paprika, Scott? And
she totally has a very similar face, I'd say.
The haircut, obviously it's a different color, but it's, again, very similar to the lead character in Paprika, the titular character in Paprika.
Paprika also comes after Tokyo Godfathers as well. It's 3 years later, so she could be an inspiration to that character.
Also looks like the character, the lead heroine from Perfect Blue to some extent too, although the animation in that's a lot more polished. I thought she was maybe the most charismatic in terms of her insults, and like, even though they're childish at times, I think she dragged out the most laughs for me. Her expressions were also great too.
I loved Hannah. Yeah, she was my favorite.
Expand upon it? Nope. Okay.
She had these awesome moments where she just like brought out her authoritarian, powerful voice, and that would just shock me as a viewer, but obviously have a big impact on other characters as well.
I liked her end thing where she was just like super insulting Gin, and what's her name? Miyuki was like, is it okay for you to like end it right there? She's like,
oh yeah,
her daughter's going to end up hating him now. She's like, nah, she loves him. She'll forgive him. Sometimes you got to have another monster in the area.
Yeah.
It's the story of the happy demon, the Oni.
The blue and red ogres or Oni or trolls, like, which pops up in every fucking anime.
I'm convinced at this point. I was like, I've heard this story. And I was like, oh.
Although in this case, I kind of found it funny because I was like, I felt that the character telling this story in a direct simile to her situation was very suitable because it's not true at all.
Yes.
Yeah. And Hana's also not necessarily the role that the blue ogre normally takes as well. Like, the blue ogre is like a very tragic figure. They go away forever. But it seems pretty clear that Hana and Gin aren't losing their relationship because of this argument.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
That's what made it such a great simile there, because there are really no parallels between the two stories aside from the fact that she's making herself look a little bad to make Gin look a little better.
It totally aligns with the what would you call it? Like, the melodrama of Hana's character. Like, she likes to be melodramatic, and so it perfectly suits how she pictures herself in a dramatic way, and it does allow her to, you know, do something kind for Gin.
God damn it, Gin, and that stupid scene with the angel. Would you like my angel-y healing or an ambulance? Ambulance. So who was your favorite character, Scott?
Oh, obviously Oda, the mob boss, getting crushed by the car.
What?
I was just snorting and laughing so hard when I saw his red face just pinned beneath the car.
The guy they found
right after Hana's like, who the hell parks in the middle of the street like that? And then when they explain how he got run over by the car, I was dying. By far my favorite character. Nice. Hana's a close second. Every scene he was in, I was brought nearly to tears, and so I have to give it to the minor character.
And you gotta say, for being a mob boss, he probably shows the least amount of
tenacity. verbosity.
Yeah, those things too. But he's also the...
He's a pretty kind person throughout all of
it. Yeah, he has... It seems like he has absolutely no judgment towards our three protagonists for being homeless, whereas everyone else in the story has some judgment. But regardless, doesn't matter. I don't think they have any judgment from any character, really. Like, yeah, no one cares about them being homeless or looking that...
And that further reinforces that thematic lesson, or I don't know, the moral of the story that we talked about, like, within the first 5 minutes of the podcast, is that, you know, these people who are obviously judged quite harshly by society aren't ones to actually cast much judgment upon one another and other people. Like, they are more understanding and I think empathetic to those that they meet.
Well, okay, so I think you could say that, but you could also say that, you know, because the mob boss accepted them, and because he said, oh, these people saved my lives, like the other
Everyone else does as well, out of fear,
you know, they're like, oh, yes, we accept you too, type of thing.
I still think, though, that it's reinforced by Oda then, even if his subordinates or underlings are just following his orders, like,
everyone,
you can still give that credit to Oda as a character
right.
then.
Yes, exactly.
And, you know, it also stands as being possible, too, that this is yet another case of Japanese media kind of playing out the Yakuza or the mob, the Japanese mob, as being like a positive force.
Oh, yeah.
Yakuza must like donate pencils to animators or something.
I hear you're having a bad day. Here's a new pen.
I know if like there are accounts, like numerous accounts of like the Yakuza doing really good things, like funding roads and schools and shit like that. But it's still a criminal organization.
Yeah, but you gotta be the Robin Hood.
Yeah, that
because if you're not, then everyone's against you.
If you're cutting off people's fingers, you've gotta have like some PR turnaround for it.
Hey, here's money to pay for your like, we just broke your knees, but here's some money to go to rehab. You'll be better in no time.
Oh my gosh.
Well, I've stopped using drugs now that I can't walk anywhere.
Yeah, I think that about does it for Tokyo Godfathers.
Omake.
Yay.
Nice, guys.
Well, until the next time we see each other.
Oh, wait, before we do that,
oh,
if you had questions, comments, or concerns, you can contact us at podcast@fancyramen.com.
And also check us out at fancyramen.com, the new fancyramen.com. That's changed slightly. That probably hasn't changed at all.
No, it won't change until episode 21.
What episode are we going to be on?
This will be 20 this week. This is 20 this week, I should say.
No, it's not. Why are you dating this omake?
Is this an omake? I was just going to name it like a special.
Isn't that what omake is?
No.
Yeah, omake is our bonus.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Yeah. And we didn't read like an exclusive email on this one either, so I wouldn't feel bad calling it.
I guess you can call it the Fancy Ramen Watch Party.
Oh, yeah.
No, we need a better name for that.
We'll see what happens. See what happens. I'm Neil.
I'm Lizzie.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Scott.
Thanks for watching.
Gonna catch up there.
Bye, guys.